I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to Words on a Wire. Today in the studio, I have a co-host. His name is Amit Ghosh, who is very well known on the literary scene here in El Paso. He is the founder of Border Senses, and actually he was an MFA candidate here when I first started teaching, which was so many years ago that I don't even remember. And Amit and I are going to talk to David Bowles, who is a fantastic writer. He is a professor at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley. He is author of the books The Smoking Mirror and also They Call Me Güero, which is a Tomas Rivera Mexican-American Children's Book Award winner. He has been published in Strange Horizons, Apex Magazine, Metamorphosis, Rattle, Translation Review, and the Journal of Children's Literatures. And in 2017, he was inducted into the Texas Institute of Letters. David Bowles, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Hey, I'm happy to be with you guys having this conversation. Thanks. Oh,
you know, I would love to talk to you about They Call Me Güero because I know it's an amazing book and it's winning multiple awards and it has put you on the map of pretty much every book festival in the country. But today we're here to talk about Dignidad Literaria, which is
right.
A movement that you founded with others. And to tell us a little bit about the movement Dignidad Literaria and how it began.
So shortly after Miriam Gurba wrote her really scathing and on-point review of American Dirt, which was commissioned by Miss Magazine, but then they paid her the kill fee because it was too negative for their taste.
Right. And I read that review, and it was an amazing review, very well written and very to the point.
Yeah, definitely. Several others of us also read the book and began to support Medium and write our own reviews. And kind of informally and organically on Twitter, we began to give people a heads up. I mean, we weren't necessarily trying to cancel the book or keep people from reading it, but we wanted them to know, hey, if you're going to read this, please understand that it is a harmful book. It does misappropriate and misuse the immigrant experience in Mexico. And you should, if you're going to read it in conversation with other books and understand a little bit about the author and about how much of a commercial venture the book is. And in doing that work, we got a lot of people really upset with us because you're supposed to just, you know, when the Oprah and the rest of the big publishing industry anoints a book the white savior of the year, you're supposed to just like lower your head and say yes and just let it happen. And when you push back against it, then you're the villain. So we were being vilified, and that brought us closer together. And Roberto Lovato, who had founded Presente.org some time back to fight against, for example, the whitewashing that was going to happen with Coco in its original form, the movie Day of the Dead, which was going to have a white director, white writer, white music by white people. And they got a letter campaign going that shook Disney up and made them bring Mexican-Americans aboard. And they also got rid of Lou Dobbs from CNN when he was being cruel to Mexicans. So Roberto Lovato, he jumped in and he was like, hey guys, why don't we try to use this as a way to have a conversation with Macmillan, the publishing company behind Flatiron Books, the imprint that published American Dirt. And so we came together and agreed. We sent a letter to them, and within 2 hours, they had agreed to sit down with us and talk. And we had that conversation last week. It was a really powerful conversation where we were able to essentially strike a blow for literary dignity, for, you know, equity, for the Latinx community, the Mexican-American community, especially in the United States, in publishing, because we've been shut out. You know, as a writer, how tough it is to get past the gatekeepers at the Big Five.
Right.
And it's no wonder that though Latinos make up, you know, 18% of the U.S. population, we are the authors of less than 3% of the books published every year. It is a deliberate kind of freezing out of our voices because we don't fit what the narrative that they want to tell about our community and about our countries of origin. So, yeah, I mean, we got Macmillan to the table, and then after 2 hours, we had, they did not want to give us any kind of concrete next steps, but we got them to agree to first of all, to admit that they needed to change, that there was a problem, that they do not have enough Latinx representation. We got them to agree to come up with a plan within 90 days of our meeting to address that problem and to increase the percentage of Latinx individuals working in their editorial staff and in their books. And then finally, we got them to agree to an accountability meeting 30 days after that first one. So in about 3 more weeks, we're going to meet back with them and see the progress they've made. It was a pretty important thing. But Dignidad Literaria, you know, more broadly than that, is also about bringing together the voices in our community, in towns across the entire United States, to celebrate our voices, our unique, authentic voices, to lift them in celebration of ourselves, kind of in defiance of a publishing culture that would erase us.
Right, right. It initially was a response to the ridiculous support of American Dirt by Oprah Winfrey and by so many, you know, amazing popular writers like Stephen King and Sandra Cisneros. But it really took on a life of its own. And I feel like you're leaving American Dirt in the dirt and you're moving on to something more positive.
That's what we want. Totally.
Like I said, the great positive thing is that you're really starting a conversation. You're getting a lot of Latino writers involved. I mean, the fact is, if you're a Latino writer, if you're even a Latino activist, you have heard about this and you have, you know, you have been exposed to, you know, what's going on. But the effect that might partially take place, unfortunately, is that I know Miriam put something on Facebook recently about this book, American Dirt, is like number 5 in the country and number 3 in Latino literature. And unfortunately, you're making it's bringing a lot of attention to the book itself.
The side effect, I guess, right?
Right.
But I would submit to you that if we hadn't done this, the book still would have gotten tons of attention and none of it would have been negative.
Yes.
And there would have been no sense that the book was problematic. And to me, that's dangerous. If her purported, I mean, because think about how the book was positioned. The book was positioned as the definitive story of immigration.
Right.
The book that was going to help white America understand what the faceless brown mass was really all about.
Right.
And she was going to humanize Mexico and immigrants and the border in a way that no one else had been able to do for white America. Those are some like really ballsy goals to have,
right.
But she does none of that stuff. The book is just a, you know, kind of a pulpy quasi-literary book of the sort that Gillian Flynn might write. It's not, it's certainly not what they were purporting it to be. But they've sold it that way. They've positioned it that way. And so imagine all the readers out there picking up this book and thinking, ah, okay, I'm going to really understand Mexico by reading it.
Right,
there's real
right.
danger. And we have to be the voices saying, hey, read this, if you're going to, in conversation with Luis Urrea or with other writers who've written about the immigrant experience.
Right. And
it's really a rom-com type of book, a romantic comedy book kind of thing with a very movie appeal. I think that's why they gave her the money, because I think they thought they could move it into the movie space and make double money kind of thing, sort of thing.
Yeah, and it seems like Flatiron, the publisher of this book, is really kind of responsible for marketing it in this way, calling it the grapes of wrath of our time, and you know, and I'm wondering about the author herself, who you know, admitted she kind of probably made a mistake at the end of the book where she says, "I wish somebody more brown than I could have written this." And well, hello, there are more brown people there.
Well, you know, I heard her interview with Maria Hinojosa on Latino USA, in which she now claims to be partly Puerto Rican, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
But she wasn't Puerto Rican before this.
And being Puerto Rican really doesn't help her very much. So,
Yeah, so I have not read the book, and I will not read the book. I'm really not interested in actually reading it, but I certainly care about the issue. But one of the interesting things is that cover is probably now one of the most recognizable covers of books in America, which is kind of sad.
It is. And then if you basically just go on Amazon to and look up the book of any Mexican-American author, especially if it's a book that has to do with Mexico, and her book will appear as a strip ad above it. Last night, a whole bunch of us were like tweeting images at each other like, can you believe this nonsense? And all kinds of vulgarities to speak into issue out when you're seeing it, because, you know, you're looking at like Luis Urrea's book, and then suddenly across the top, it's like American Dirt. That book cover right there up above his book and his name, and the same is true for basically any. I suspect, because if you look your book up, you'll probably find an ad for American Dirt as well.
Oh, you know, no matter what I look up on Amazon, American Dirt comes up. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's trying to sell me the book. And one of the things that seems to me almost like an organized assertion on the part of the publisher is they canceled her book tour saying that there were death threats. I find that really hard to believe that.
Oh, well, they admitted to us that there were no death threats. So at the meeting at Flatiron, there was a point at which in my presentation, because I presented our proposal, that I was talking about just trying to explain to them the strength of our emotional response and the reason for it. And I talked to them about the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo and how the border crossed over us, and mm-hmm. but then how family land was snatched up in these land grab schemes, and then how, you know, school segregation and La Matanza of 1915 and, you know, all these lynchings by the Texas Rangers of Mexican Americans and the two mass deportations and just on and on and on. I said, all these things make us really wary because we have long memories, and this intergenerational trauma is not something that we just forget. Mm-hmm. When we see the writing on the wall, when we see the signs like we see right now in the Trump administration, we're going to be a little more sensitive to these kinds of encroachments of a harmful nature into our community. And so right then Bob Miller was like, well, we're friends with Jeanine Cummins, and we also feel really, really upset about the way she's being treated. And like, basically equating her sense of this newly minted millionaire is getting bullied on the social media, and now that's the same as what's happened to the Mexican-American community. And that devolved into a conversation about what those threats were about. And Bob Miller wanted to say that they were death threats. And his own people, the women on the Flatiron editorial team, raised their fingers at him and said, no, Bob, Jeanine has not received any death threats.
Wow.
And at that moment, there was like a wedge driven between the women and Bob Miller. And it was kind of a done deal after that because he had screwed up. He wanted to make an assertion that wasn't true. All of this is very manufactured. There were some booksellers that emailed Flatiron saying, we can't provide security. We don't know what might happen. We're a little worried. What were they worried about? Well, they're worried because Mexican Americans are going to protest. And of course, we're violent barbarians, right? So,
right.
But they had not received any kind of phone calls. And there was one phone call that one bookseller had received that had a specific threat against somebody, but it was against another person that would be there that night. So basically, because of the mean tweets that she'd been getting on Twitter and these other vague things, they decided that it was too much a risk.
Right.
And they canceled the tour.
And probably canceling
right
that
now as we speak, Oprah's little secret television recording for Apple TV is going on in Tucson. She kept it like totally secret. She reached out and got people to be on the show. Some of them Mexican American authors who had to sign like NDAs, and there are a bunch of other people who were invited to record their tweets and stuff like that. And she completely in secret set this up because she doesn't want to actually have any kind of public discourse. But somebody leaked the information to me last night, and I shared it on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know
whether anybody showed up to protest, but that kind of like underhanded secret in the dark of night, sneaking around. No, let's not let people know that we're having this conversation so we can protect Jeanine Cummins from Mexican American protesters who maybe will throw a chancla at her. It's like stupid. So stupid.
That secret meeting that Oprah's having about this conversation, was anybody from Dignidad Literaria invited to join?
No, sir, we were not. Not a single one of us.
That's crazy.
Even though at that meeting that we had with Macmillan, over the phone, three representatives of Oprah's empire were there. So somebody from her magazine, somebody from Harpo Productions, her TV and movie arm of her empire, and then somebody from Oprah's book club. And we, at the end of it, said, you know, please tell Oprah we would like to sit down, we would like to talk to her, not about American Dirt, but about Oprah's book club's complicity in this situation we're in, this underrepresentation of U.S. Latinos, and especially Mexican Americans. She's chosen 82 books over the course of the years. Not a single one was written by a Mexican or Mexican American. Mm. Only one was written by a U.S. Latino, and that was a Haitian American. It's just really disgusting. And then for her to pick this book and say, oh, this is the one that opened my heart and mind to the immigrant experience, is just gross, really, frankly.
Yeah. You know, I have 7 books. She's never chosen one of mine or even mentioned it. Well, you know, that's interesting that she didn't invite anybody, and that the press was saying, oh, you know, the image that I get is that there's these radical Chicano Latinx writers who are calling up book for and say, I'm going to blow you up if you put that in. And say, you know,
that's,
I mean,
that's exactly what they wanted
blow
to
your book up.
To intimate, but it's not at all true. And you know, it's disgusting that they haven't retracted
and
what they said.
And it just makes the book so much more important from their perspective that this is, we are protecting
free speech.
We are protecting literature and all this, which is, you know, which is crazy because there was an article in The Guardian just that I just read today, and Roxane Gay is talking about how she receives death threats every week. And I know that Mariam has received death threats, and I know some of the people who are speaking out against this are the really the ones that are receiving death threats.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the people at Flatiron were surprised by, especially the women, when Medium was like, I've got them right here. I get death threats every single day. And that's something that also really changed the tenor of the conversation.
Yeah, I'm quoting Roxane Gay. She says, it is important to acknowledge that death threats people receive for daring to have opinions, for daring to be black or brown or queer or disabled or women or trans or any marginalized identity. What kind of negative energy, I guess I could say, to make it more of a blanket, have you received because of this, because of your outspokenness about this?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I've gotten like trolls and stuff like that. But I mean, one of the really sad things about this is in these types of situations, in these social justice situations, it's almost always the women who are targeted with the violent, vile threats. I get like, you know, people coming into my mentions and saying like mean things to me, but no one's like threatening to kill me or rape me or anything like that. Men of that nature tend to target the people they think are the weakest because they're usually cowardly fools.
Uh-huh.
And it's really unfortunate. But yeah, no, I've had to block many people on social media, and I've had to, I get ridiculous emails that I just delete, and I haven't been as impacted by that as she has.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And Amit and David, let's talk a little bit about what Dignidad Literaria is doing around the country to increase awareness of Latino publishing and Latinx books.
Yeah, David, can you say how you came up with the idea of this program that we are all going to be part of very soon here, and other people who have been part of it already?
Yeah, definitely. We, in talking about things that we could do kind of like leading up to our conversation and during the week right after our conversation with Macmillan, so they would know that people were mobilizing, we came up with the idea of a national week of action. We wanted to, as quickly as possible, get people in different cities throughout the United States to organize pláticas or panels or readings, something that would give visibility to the voices in that community and also give a forum for people to be able to talk through their collective feelings about the book. And we decided to launch with an event that I did here in the Rio Grande Valley in Edinburgh at the Center for Mexican-American Studies at UTRGV. And we had a variety of people, the upcoming Texas Poet Laureate, publishers, representatives from the McAllen Public Library who rejected the offer by Oprah's book club to be one of their special book clubs to promote American Dirt.
Yeah.
We had a blogger, we had some university professors, and we had like a standing room only crowd of people basically at noon on a Friday. It was insane because people are so hurt by this and so eager to talk about what lovely, incredible things are happening in our community in terms of literary endeavors. And that's what we want to do, lift those voices, use this moment to not only push back against the publishing industry, but also to celebrate and mobilize and to show people our voice, because we do have an amazing voice that's often kind of elided from the conversation.
And Amit, what do you plan on doing here in El Paso?
So, as you know, David, Bobby Bird, who put me in touch with you, and then I spoke to a variety of people here because of my involvement in the literary community. And I think the border also, this border, much like your border maybe, has a variety of writers of different backgrounds, and I don't think they also get the access to publishing like anywhere else. So I think what we are going to discuss is, well, you know, this border also has become very political because of Trump, etc. And then the August 3rd shooting that happened here, unfortunately, and then this situation. So the Mexican, you know, history and the Mexican identity, which I have learned to appreciate. I'm not from here originally, but is very important to this region, and I think we need to talk about all of that, including the literary part of it, the literary, the political, all of that, because unless the community as a whole understands the situation, I don't think we can as a community make progress. And that's, I hope that's what we can talk about. We have open mic that we run, the Border Census and open mic, so we're going to do a reading that runs anyway. So we're going to coordinate with them, do an open mic reading.
Well, David, it sounds like there's a lot of positive things happening because of your activism and because of this Dignidad Literaria. One of the positive things that has been happening throughout social media and throughout the country is there's all these lists coming out of books
yeah.
that you should read instead of reading American Dirt.
And, exactly.
Yeah, and a lot of books have seen sales like go through the roof. Sometimes really ironically, so for example, I mean, I don't mean to drag anybody, but the author Erika Sanchez, who wrote I'm Not Your Perfect Mexican-American Daughter, she gave American Dirt like a positive review, but her book has been on a lot of these alternate lists, and so her book got back on the bestseller list
wow.
because
yeah.
of people who have the different point of view from hers promoting her book. It's just like one of those ironies. So, yeah.
Which I'm reading right now. It's a fantastic book.
It is really
but
good.
But I actually ordered the book before the American Dirt controversy.
How ironic.
but there is there was this article recently in the Associated Press, and it was actually saying that Latino books are going up in sales at Luis Urrea, and there's some suggestion that perhaps Cummings, the author of American Dirt, either consciously or unconsciously
copied
some
yep.
images. But his books are going up. They even said my book sales are going up. And I'm not sure if that's true, but that's certainly something that's very positive, that we are, you are turning this into something that's empowering and something about Latino literature. So, well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
No, you're quite welcome, man. And it's something, it's an act of solidarity. We stand together or we don't stand at all. And I feel really, really proud, for example, to be standing side by side with you, Amit, and you, Danny, and just all the rest of my gente out there in El Paso, the Cinco Puntos people, big hug to Bobby Bird and all the rest. Adelante, this is all we can do is just keep moving forward.
And, you know, I just have to say that I admire your literary activism, and it not only surrounds this issue. This isn't just something you jumped on and says, OK, I'll ride this for a while. But you are a true literary activist, and you are one of the probably responsible for Barnes & Noble quitting their diverse editions.
Yeah, that was a really, really fascinating thing. So, you know, off there in New York City, fighting this fight, I suddenly found myself getting pulled into another one. It was just so much fun.
Tell us what Diverse Editions is. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, if you've got time, I'll walk you through it. So Barnes & Noble on 5th Avenue and 46th Street announced over social media last Wednesday that they were going to have this event on Thursday. They were going to have a panel launching this new line. It was 12 works of like canonical classical literature with four variant covers. And what they basically done is taken the protagonist and race swapped them. So you would have, for Moby Dick, you would have like a black Captain Ahab, a Latino Captain Ahab, a Native American Captain Ahab, and an Asian American Captain Ahab,
right.
For example, right? The idea was the patently insane. At first, everybody knew were the black versions, because that's what you saw in this image, where all these like covers of canonical white literature redone with black characters. It looked like blackface. It was really, really bad. And then the more we started learning about it, the worse it got. Barnes & Noble got this idea from an ad agency they were working with. The ad agency took a cue from J.K. Rowling, the woman who wrote Harry Potter,
right.
from her attitude towards the stage play of The Cursed Child, which is like a sequel to the books that mm-hmm. shows some of the characters as adults, in which Hermione was played by a black actress. And when they asked J.K. Rowling, you know, what she thought about it, she was like, well, I never described her race in the books, so she could certainly be black. There's no problem. And so this ad agency was like, well, let's find books, classical books, in which the character's race is not really described, and then let's create these alternate covers. They used an AI algorithm to search through the books, and they picked the ones that had no mention of the race. The problem is all these books were written by white writers and are clearly about white people. So The Secret Garden was one of the books they chose. Can you imagine being a Latina girl and getting the book with the Latina girl on the cover, and you sit down to read it and you realize it's this racist white family in colonial India treating the brown people of India like trash? What a horrible thing to have happen to you.
I could attest to that.
Yeah. Mary, quite contrary, brings a whole new meaning to that. It's kind of ridiculous because it's basically the publishing industry's diversity, their move towards diversity, and it's not diverse at all. Well, thank you.
No, it's not diverse at all.
Thank you. Because of you, David, they quit that. They're pulling off.
I basically started setting up a protest that very day. I'm like, go to the panel at 6 o'clock tomorrow. I'm going to be flying out, but go and ask the hard questions. And then I said, I'm going to go at 1:30. I'm going to take a look at these books. If you want to show up, reporters, if you want to come talk. And when I got there, I got an email from – something tricky here. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Something weird happened, and I didn't know you were – something tricky that I haven't mentioned is that Barnes & Noble did this in conjunction with Penguin Random House. Now, Penguin Random House is one of the people that published my books. I've got a children's book coming out from them next year. Vintage Español puts out the Spanish versions of my Cinco Puntos books. It's kind of an awkward thing to be standing up against a publisher, a major publisher who's publishing your work. But what's right is right. And so I was very publicly against that. And I got an email from the head of corporate publicity, Dylan, and she said, "Hey, David, is it okay if I go by since you're going to be in the store and maybe we can chat a little bit?" And I'm like, "Yeah, come on down." And she showed up a little bit late, and I had already talked to some like the press. There was a reporter from School Library Journal and a couple other venues, and there's some other people. And she showed up, and we like basically had this really tense conversation in Barnes & Noble in front of all these reporters, and basically they canceled the event and they pulled the line.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. But it was a really awkward thing because Sanyu is a black woman. And one of the very first things that she said was the four of us executives at Penguin Random House who signed off on this are all people of color. So, and my response had to be, well, you know what? People of color can screw things up too.
Well, David Bowles, author of They Call Me Weto and other books, apparently some that are coming out. Thank you for joining us and for sharing this very important story for us. Where can people find out more about Dignidad Literaria and get involved?
Okay, so you can follow the hashtag Dignidad Literaria. There are also websites that we're working on. If you go to presente.org, you can find also additional resources about Dignidad Literaria, how to set up events and stuff like that.
Okay, well,
thank you. And we have our event this next Tuesday, so we're looking forward to having that in El Paso, Texas.
Thank you so much for organizing it. You guys have all the luck in the world. Los quiero mucho. Cuídense.
Thank you, David. Gracias. We'll talk to you soon.
Right. Bye.